This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. They Might Be Giants is a band defined by interesting contradictions. It has a cult following, but it's also reached a mass audience through its song You're Not the Boss of Me, the theme for the TV series Malcolm in the Middle. The band's songs are loved for their clever and sophisticated lyrics about unusual subjects, but They Might Be Giants also has a lot of fans who are kids. In fact, the band has a new children's book and companion CD called Bed, Bed, Bed. It's a follow-up to their recent children's CD, No. The band is made up of John Flansburgh and John Linnell, who have been making music together for about 20 years. A profile in The New Yorker described them as the elders to a whole generation of smart, earnest nerd rockers. John Linnell plays keyboards and sings. John Flansburgh plays guitar and sings. Their new children's book, Bed, 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 is an illustrated version of the songs on the companion CD that comes with the book. It includes this song, Impossible.
Well, they said I was impossible. Yes, they said I was impossible. And that someone who behaved like me But I knew that I was possible, not completely unbelievable. And the one they said could never be, it was me, it was me. But there's something else they didn't know. You can change your shape and you can grow out of nothing into something new, something made up into something true. Though it happens quite impossibly, the impossible turns out to be possibly.
That's Impossible, the companion CD that comes with the new They Might Be Giants book, Bed, 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 a bedtime book. John Linnell, John Flansburgh, welcome back to Fresh Air. Good to have you
back
again.
Thank you.
I thought what we might do at the beginning is have you, John Linnell, recite the lyrics of the song, because the book is actually, you know, the lyrics of the songs. So let's hear how it sounds as a bedtime story.
Okay. I'll give it a shot. Well, they said I was impossible. Yes, they said I was impossible. And that someone who behaved like me couldn't be. But I knew that I was possible, not completely unbelievable. And the one they said could never be, it was me. It was me. But there's something else they didn't know. You can change your shape and you can grow out of nothing into something new, something made up into something true. Though it happens quite impossibly, the impossible turns out to be possibly.
Mr. William Shatner.
I like that. I think it's like the children's version of the great American story of personal transformation that, you know, you can change.
Yeah, it's kind of our low-rent version of Free to Be You and Me, I think.
Right. Like, so why did you want to do a children's book?
Well, you know, we did this children's record last year called No that was, it was remarkably successful commercially, but it was also, I mean, we felt like it was actually surprisingly successful artistically. It was a really satisfying experience in that it was a very abstract project. It really brought us back to our kind of art school rock psychedelic roots. It was very liberating to be kind of free of all the concerns of, you know, trying to figure out how to make a song that's relevant to pop radio, which is kind of dreary affair these days. So it was really fun. And we were approached to do a children's book by Simon Schuster. I'm not even sure how qualified we really are to be making children's books in a sense. But it's sort of like when somebody says, like, hey, you want to be in a movie? You kind of go like, yeah, sure.
We already had a song, too, even before the CD No that had caught on with kids. And I'm thinking of the theme from Malcolm in the Middle, You're Not the Boss
yeah.
of Me. And I've always wondered about that song. How come it's You're Not the Boss of Me, and as opposed to the more grammatically correct, You Are Not My Boss?
Well, it was something that, you know, it was a very popular expression in the household that I grew up in. And I think, you know, grammar and syntax are not such a big deal with little kids.
Yeah, I think that's part of the appeal of the song in a way, is that the grammar is so screwy. It gives it a special childlike emphasis.
Do you have kids of your own now, either of you?
I do, yeah. I've got a boy in kindergarten.
And my wife and I are raising two cats.
Uh-huh.
They're in kindergarten as well.
John, now that you have a child, are you more interested in writing songs for children?
Well, there's a sort of a more practical urgency to it. I realize that a lot of the material that John and I have done in the past, while we've always sort of felt like we were a band that kids could like, there are lyrics in our repertoire that I now see are pretty unsuitable for kids. So I like having the opportunity to do stuff that I can actually play for my son that doesn't scare him.
You've said that writing kids' songs has been artistically liberating, and I thought I'd play an example of a song I couldn't imagine you writing without the premise of, well, this is for kids, but it's a really terrific, it's a terrific song. It's called I Am Not Your Broom, and why don't we hear it, and then maybe you could talk about the writing of it. This is I Am Not Your Broom from the They Might Be Giants album, No.
Now, broom, you must now sweep for me, the dust it fills my room.
No, John, I will not sweep for you, for I am not your broom.
What nonsense are you speaking, broom? My words you must obey.
Another life awaits me, and I'm leaving you today. I am not your broom. I am not your broom. I've had enough. I'm throwing off my chains of servitude. I am not your broom. I am not your broom. No longer must I sweep for you, for I am not your broom.
That's I Am Not Your Broom from the CD No by They Might Be Giants, and my guests are John Linnell and John Flansburgh, the founders of They Might Be Giants. Can you talk a little bit about writing I Am Not Your Broom?
Sure, yeah. Well, that was actually written before we started putting together a record for kids.
That's not proving my point.
I think it's an example of something that there are a few songs on No that we sort of reworked to make them more appropriate for kids. And that one, I guess, we just figured would be okay, and, though it includes words like servitude, which I guess you have to explain to kids what that's about. Even the concept of the wage-slave broom or whatever the relationship is a little bit hard for kids to understand.
I suppose.
Well, getting back to Bostonia, I think it's sort of actually a universal theme among little brothers everywhere.
Right.
Servitude is something every family understands.
I love the song though because it works just on a, you know, on a literal, almost like housework level, but it's also could be like the angry lover or the angry worker.
And yeah, well, it was kind of meant to be completely literal. The song was written after I got a hold of one of these little inexpensive cameras in the shape of an eyeball that you can plug into your computer, and I realized like John and I could actually make our own videos, not for $500,000, but for, you know, the $99 it cost to buy this thing. So I started out, you know, looking around the room for something to use in the video, and all there really was my broom and my face. And so that pretty much was the entire basis for this song.
Right.
In addition to writing songs for children, you're still writing whatever songs you want to write. And you just have this knack for coming up with lyrics that say things that songs don't often say, or at least they don't often say it in the way you say it in your songs. I guess I'm thinking here as an example of your song Older. I mean, there's a lot of songs that are kind of bittersweet about getting on in years and stuff, but I can't think of one that's as kind of blunt as Older.
Yeah, I think that you know, some of my favorite stuff that we've done just kind of emerges. You know, I mean, it's not that we're not thinking about what we're doing, but I think often stuff just kind of pops out and then you make sense of it after the fact. And Older was that kind of song. It kind of felt like it wrote itself because it had this sort of weird unconscious quality.
John Linnell, were you thinking about getting older when you wrote the song, or did a clever rhyme just come to you?
I pretty much think about getting older all the time.
Do you?
In fact, I mean, the funny thing about our stuff generally is I think that John and I have a lot of anxieties and concerns that are sort of floating in the background that are just there in the songs because that's what's in our heads. You know, the music is often much happier, and I think that's one of the reasons why people think we're appropriate for their kids, even our adult material. But yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, death and things like that are pretty much constant topics for us.
Yes, with song titles like Hopeless Bleak Despair.
Hopeless Bleak Despair being an example, yeah.
But what I want to play is older. So why don't we give that a listen? And this is from the They Might Be Giants album called Minkar.
You're older than you've ever been, and now you're even older, and now you're even older, and now you're even older. You're older than you've ever been, and now you're even older, and now you're older still. Time is marching on, and time is still marching on. This day will soon be at an end, and now it's even sooner, and now it's even sooner, and now it's even sooner. This day will soon be at an end, and now it's even sooner, and now it's sooner still.
Just for the edification of your listeners, that's a Rausch fife and a sarrusophone.
That's right.
Which you won't hear too often.
Are there any Rausch fife or sarrusophone enthusiasts out there?
They're real ancient. Well, one of them, I guess, would be called.
One of them's a 19th century instrument that's still right. Hanging around. One of them really is like a, I guess, from the Renaissance.
Yeah, the sarrusophone is sort of an ancestor of the saxophone. And the engineer actually turned to us in the middle of the recording session and said, I know why this instrument didn't catch on. It doesn't work.
Maybe that's why there was something about the song that was reminding me of like an early chant.
Right, yeah, right.
Absolutely.
That's kind of what we're going for. I mean, it was definitely a conscious effort to, you know, create a sort of otherworldly, out of time.
Something with spider webs on
it. Yeah.
Right.
So get me some instrument that has some spider webs,
right,
please.
My guests are John Linnell and John Flansburgh of the band They Might Be Giants. They have a new book for children that comes with a CD. It's called Bed, Bed, Bed. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are John Flansburgh and John Linnell of the band They Might Be Giants. They have a new book for children that comes with a CD called Bed, Bed, Bed. You still have Dial-A-Song, which is one of the early things that made the band unique. You had, John, why don't you describe it?
Well, it's basically just a phone number in Brooklyn that's connected to a phone machine, we have a, you know, it's a like a 80s style phone machine that breaks all the time because it can't really hold up to the weight of the calls. But you simply hear a song. And the idea of it kind of came out of, you know, we came up as a band in the mid 80s in sort of a weird downtown New York, Lower East Side, East Village art and performance context. And it seemed like an interesting way to find a different kind of audience for what we were doing. We were playing in a lot of clubs at 1 a.m, and it seemed sort of unreasonable to think that a curiosity seeker would stay up that late. So this was a way to kind of reach out to them. And phone machines were really a fad at that moment. I mean, it's hard to think of phone machines as being new, but they were a brand new idea. So we were kind of harnessing, you know, just the latest technology and using it to sort of show our songs, you know, get our songs to people without having any kind of, you know, other support.
And how has the use and the meaning of the Dial-A-Song changed over the years?
I don't think it particularly has. I mean, it's still the exact same setup. There's only one line. It's the place where all of our material kind of gets its beginning. All the demos of songs that will eventually wind up in the show or on records or will be, you know, are doomed to obscurity all make their way, you know, first through Dial-A-Song. And I think that, the audience has not changed all that much. I mean, originally there was this real... Originally, I think it was a more local thing where there were sort of downtown New York people at work listening on their speakerphones. But I think there's still that element. There's people who call it up sort of as a way to break up their day, you know, just something to amuse them.
Yeah. Although I think the internet has kind of largely, you know, in some ways, the way people use the internet for entertainment at work reminds me, it's as if it's the biggest Dial-A-Song service of all time. You know, it's just a great way to get away from your job.
Yeah, but do you have feelings about free music on the internet?
You know, it's we give away a lot of free music on the internet. I think that, you know, it's a really complicated issue, and people have have very, very strong opinions about it. You know, it's fine for us. I there's so many great songwriters that I feel like are kind of having the structure of how they make a living kind of cut out from under them. It's really hard to just pretend that that's not meaningful. I think it's going to change the way. It's hard making a living as a musician in the first place. So it seems like it's kind of dreary to make it even harder. But you know, I don't know, we have very mixed emotions about it because as a band that's been giving away music for 20 years, like we're very comfortable with the idea. So it's been kind of a boom for us.
Right. The standard line up through now has been that, you know, we're benefiting more from people downloading our stuff illegally than we've been hurt by it. You know, but right. I don't know if that's generally, or I don't know if that'll always be. This morning, I actually walked by two guys pulling New York Post out of a newspaper box. Uh-huh. Obviously, had paid only once, so maybe I don't know. Maybe this kind of crime just dovetails into the general.
You know, the oddest thing is, you know, burning CDs is a big fad, and we often do like in-store performances where we'll do a little show and then sign stuff for people, and people have started coming up to us with like burned CDs of our music for like their favorite mix of They Might Be Giant songs that they've gotten off the internet and just want us to autograph that. So they're very, people are very casual about, you know, their behavior.
That they've gotten off the internet without paying for it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how do you lecture them or is that okay?
No,
with you?
Yeah, you know, it's like, I mean,
we glare at them.
Yeah.
Scowl.
Just silent stares. No, it's really hard. It's really hard to even get into in a way. I mean, I feel like, you know, we have a very strange, we don't have a consistent point of view about it. We right. like people to hear our music. You know, being a musician, there's nothing greater than playing your song for somebody. It's not like you got into it to make, you know, 0.5 cents per play, you know.
Do you copyright your songs before putting them on Dial-A-Song?
No, we don't even tell people. We don't tell our office or management or anything. We're incredibly.
Can you keep a secret?
That's what the show is about.
Yeah, we don't worry about any of that stuff. You know, probably the most successful song we ever did, "Birdhouse in Your Soul," like was on Dial-A-Song for a couple of years before it ever was released in any other form, and we were pretty sure that, you know, that Elton John was not going to be stealing "Birdhouse in Your Soul" too soon.
But say I stole it and said it was mine. What recourse would you have?
I'm sure, you know, there'd be a bunch of lawyers would be happy to come to our defense. But, you know, good luck with that, Terry. That's all.
One of the things I was thinking about Dial-A-Song is that it must be really liberating, you know, as a songwriter to have this venue where you could just, like, toss something off if you wanted to, put it on there, and see how you like it.
It's super exciting. Yeah. Although there is this aspect to the phone machine that's really deadly, which is that when you put the cassette in the machine, like people start calling in, and if they don't like the song, they'll hang up in the middle. So you're immediately reminded of whatever, you know, you might be just really digging yourself and the song you just did, and then, you know, you pop it in, you think they are gonna love this, and then you know it's like click, you know.
How do you know that they've hung up in the middle?
Oh, because you can hear the machine rewinding before it finishes the song.
Yeah, we run the risk of, if we take that kind of thing too seriously, of trying to make more and more spectacular sounding music that maybe would get away from what we were trying to do in the first place. You know, so become more like, you know, Fox News or something.
Right.
All the explosions right at the top.
That would be good. They Might Be Giants. Dial-A-Song.
26 hours a day, 9 days a week.
Right. Oh, my God.
Unfiltered
my
music.
My arms and legs are on fire.
Unfiltered music. You can handle it.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of things you can do.
Look with, forward to that.
with recordings. You know, I mean, I don't know. We try not to pay too much attention to the front row and too much attention to people hanging up in the middle. I think, you know, we recognize what we do is kind of fragile in a way, so.
John Flansburgh and John Linnell of the band They Might Be Giants. They have a new book for children that comes with a CD. It's called Bed, Bed, Bed. They'll be back in the second half of the show. Here's one of their early recordings. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with John Linnell and John Flansburgh of the band They Might Be Giants. They're known for their clever wordplay and catchy melodies. In addition to an avid following of adults, they have a lot of fans who are children, and now they have a new children's book called Bed, Bed, Bed that comes with a CD. How did you both meet?
We went to the Lincoln Public School System together outside, about 20 miles west of Boston. We really got to know each other in high school. We both wound up on the staff of the school newspaper, which was pretty much universally loathed by the student body and became this kind of clique that one of our teachers suggested we rename Vanity Fair because we were the only ones who actually read it. But and it was also our sort of clubhouse, this little newspaper office. So that was how John and I got to know each other.
What were you doing on the paper?
We wrote about whatever we felt like, a lot of it was like writing record reviews and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. John was the editor. I was the photo editor at some point. I actually went to football games and took photographs of football players, not knowing what that was. But it was, you know, in some ways, it was, you know, there were a lot of people in the room. You know, it's probably, you know, working at the Promethean is probably not that different than, you know, writing a sitcom. You know, it was like a mob of like 12 people.
Smart alecky, yeah. High school kids.
But, you know, in some ways that was a very formative time for us because, you know, so many conversations kind of played into the aesthetic of They Might Be Giants as a band. I mean, you know, you go, you know, when you're a teenager, you see a rock concert and like they bust into the, you know, endless drum solo. You get back to the school and you talk about the concert and you just realize how much no one likes drum solos and you know that and that really I think that when we started the band in some abstract way we were thinking that group of people is sort of our ultimate audience, not so much people we wanted to please but more like people we didn't want to disappoint by becoming, you
that's
know,
a good way of putting it, yeah.
You know,
I think it started with, you know, we started by, you know, keeping one another in mind when we were working, but I think we always had the sort of the clique that we hung out with in high school in mind as well.
What were the first songs you started doing together? Were they originals or covers?
Most of what we were doing was kind of sound pieces and stuff. You know, I think we both liked just playing with tape recorders and cooking up stuff and finding things around the house to make noise with. So we really kind of eased our way into actually writing songs. I mean, we started out doing much more just experimental stuff and goofing around.
Well, I thought this might be a good time to play what was, I think, like your first, you know, hit. This is Don't Let Start.
Mm-hmm.
John, can you talk about writing the song?
This is one of those songs that is kind of in the clothing of a pop song. It's got this sort of rockin' arrangement. But the problem I've often had is I write songs starting with the music and the melody, and then I have this job of trying to fill in the words to a melody that's already written. So I end up having to sort of cram words in because the syllables fit. And that, I think, accounts for a lot of the lyrics in this one, which seem they're not exactly on point all the time. It's a song that has a, you know, sort of a strangely meandering lyric, and actually it was for that reason, you know, when we put our first record out, I just felt like the lyrics were so oddball that we originally talked about putting it first on the record, and at the last minute I swapped it out for another one because I thought Don't Let's Start was just too confusing. But you know, people still wound up liking it, I think, because the music was sort of, you know, appealing.
You know how you said you write the music first and then you have to find lyrics that
often
fit,
yeah,
the rhythms. Is that why it's don't let start as opposed to just don't let start?
Yeah, I think that's probably, I think you hit the nail right on the head.
But that really works, don't you think?
Sure,
not
absolutely.
Just rhythmically, but it gets to like the frustration.
Well, that's an interesting point. Yeah, that's something I haven't, you know, I don't think too hard about this stuff when we're cooking it up. But yeah, I mean, that's certainly a way of looking at it.
That's why I'm around, to analyze it to death.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that.
So why don't we hear Don't Let's Start. Anything else you want to say about it?
No.
Okay. So this is from the first They Might Be Giants recording.
Don't let's start. This is the worst part. Could believe for all the world that you're my precious little girl. But don't let's start. I've got a weak heart and I don't get around.
That's Don't Let's Start from the first They Might Be Giants recording, and my guests are the founders of the band, John Linnell and John Flansburgh.
I love being founders. It's a great feeling.
As if like populations have become members of the band in subsequent years?
It sort of suggests, yeah. That
we're an institution.
That will carry on when we're gone as well, you know, that there will be statues of us.
In They Might Be Giants Hall.
Right.
Something to all look forward to.
No, it's a good way to describe it.
Since you didn't really set out to be performers, at least that's how it sounds hearing you talk, and it sounds like your goal in life wasn't to like be on stage. What was it like for you when you were on stage early on, and you had to find a way to be?
It was really mind blowing. I think both of us were, you know, kind of. It was just a very different sort of. Responsibility and a different kind of response than we were anticipating. I mean, I remember our very first gig very vividly. We actually, we had, you know, put the show together. We were working with a drum machine, so everything had to be kind of very tightly rehearsed with this. And our sort of gimmick as a band was that we had these very tricky arrangements that were very fast-paced, and the tape didn't stop, so it just was like this one long performance of very short songs. And so it was a real memory test.
There was a reason for that, too. We had this idea that if we stopped the tape or had blank spots in the tape, that people would realize that no one was clapping.
Right.
So we decided to do a show that had no breaks whatsoever.
It was a real defense mechanism. And we went up there and did the show. And immediately, you know, people started kind of like laughing in a very happy...
That's right.
You know, I mean, they weren't like laughing at us. They were sort of... I think they felt like they were laughing with us. But it was a very... it was just very unexpected for us. We really didn't think it was going to be that way. The bands I had been in before were kind of, we were kind of like sex bands, you know? I mean, we just did our little rock and roll teenage thing, and, you know, it was like there were girls dancing and all that stuff. And so this was like a bit of a departure. But, you know, we kind of got over that, and we sort of took it at face value, and we didn't say, like, that's, you know, the audience is wrong, you know? I mean, I think what we were doing actually probably, that was about the best thing to do with that show was just kind of laugh at it. And we sort of kind of evolved as, you know, showmen since then. And now we're like actually shockingly comfortable on stage.
And blasé.
Right.
And I got the sense that it was this kind of laughter of recognition, you know, that people, for the first time, we got the sense like people were actually completely identifying with the stuff we were doing. And
right.
That was, you know, that was a completely new experience for us, because up until then we'd just been making recordings and we'd play them for people, and it didn't have that quality of like
yeah.
a group of people all going, oh yeah, I know what this is about.
And I've said this before, but I felt like people related to us like they related to like their brother or their cousin. Like there's something very direct. I mean, it wasn't like they were relating to us like we were, you know, the next Mick Jagger or something, but they definitely got it in a very immediate, recognizable way.
John, you use the expression sex bands, that the band you used to play with was like a sex band.
Well, we weren't that like sexy.
No, but that's such a great expression. Do other people use that? I haven't heard that before, but it seems like a perfect description of what a certain type of band is about.
Well, I mean, a lot of, you know, I mean, when you're in a band like us, you are constantly reminded that there's a whole big part of like the music business that is basically just, you know, about, you know, pushing very pretty people in front of very large crowds. I mean, that's a very successful way of doing it. But, you know, I mean, rock and roll music. I mean, we were talking about, you know, being in a garage band or being in a cover band, you know, there's a social, you know, that's like teenage stuff. You know, there's a social component to that, that it's like, you know, a lot of musicians, you know, you always hear musicians go like, oh, I got into music to play in front of girls. And, you know, I was shy and it was a way for me to meet girls. And I don't know. I mean, that was... We were kind of the opposite of that. We ran away from the girls, we ran into our living rooms and bedrooms and just worked with tape recorders.
Well, John Flansburgh, John Linnell, it's been great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
John Flansburgh and John Linnell of the band They Might Be Giants. They have a new book for children that comes with a CD called Bed, Bed, Bed. The documentary about the band called Gigantic has just been released on DVD.